And welcome back to Coast with Joshua P. Warren with us. We're going to continue chatting with him about his extraordinary paranormal searches. And we're going to take your phone calls, ghosts, UFOs, just about anything goes with Joshua P. Warren next. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Joshua P. Warren with us. So, Josh, what is your conclusion about this piece of video and what might be on it?
Well, you know, George, it's very interesting that you asked me that because it ties into Chapter 3 of my presentation.
How about that?
And Chapter 3 is something I think you're going to be really interested in, as well as the listeners. And by the way, I'm glad we're about to take calls because I'm really looking for some insight and input on what I'm about to tell you because it's pretty darn strange.
Okay, fire away.
Okay, so 2 years ago, you and I worked on a project here in Puerto Rico called the Arecibo Project.
That's right.
And this was conducted on August 15th of 2014, which was the 37th anniversary of the WOW signal.
I lent you my voice on that project.
Your voice was broadcast all over the universe. It's still speeding out there right now. I don't know how far away it is, but it'll be working forever until it hits something that absorbs it.
Huh.
And so now, for folks who are not certain about this, the WOW signal was a signal that was detected by SETI on August the 15th of 1977. It was a signal that was picked up at the Big Ear Telescope in Ohio, and it was so weird. It was a very organized pattern of numbers that came in, so odd that the guy who was monitoring it just wrote "Wow" in the margin next to it, and scientists have never since received it again or figured out what it was. So in our experiment, we decided that on the anniversary, we would incorporate all the listeners, people to think telepathically. We would get ham radio operators sending out signals. We would set up wishing machines, and we would try to send a message out saying, please, we are returning your signal, so please show up at a certain set of GPS coordinates where I had a live webcam set up streaming all this for 8 hours. So you recorded a message, a peaceful message to our space brothers, and we had the ham operator send it out, and everybody was working together. And at one point, amazingly, as C. Eric Scott, my TV production partner, was analyzing this, we captured an object that looks very much like the object the Homeland Security captured. It's a small, black, slightly saucer-shaped object that flies down to the camera and then zooms off into the sky and does so while producing this high-pitched sound. Now, I came on to Coast AM that night to give the results, and at one point, your show played an audio recording that has been floating around on the internet for years, labeled as WOW Signal Audio.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people started freaking out because they said, oh my God, that sounds like the sound that the UFO made that we captured on our webcam.
Wow, animals freaked out too that night.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so we analyzed the spectrograph. They were not identical. They were very similar. Well, since then, a lot of people have been analyzing the audio from the WOW signal and dissecting it and coming up with explanations for what it is. And I got curious, and I thought, you know, I wonder exactly how that WOW signal was converted into audio, because I got on the internet and I went to a website devoted to the project, and they said there was no audio from the WOW signal. So I contacted, of course, Seth Shostak, the head of SETI, whom you know very well.
Yes.
And I said, Dr. Shostak, is there any audio that came from the WOW signal? And he said that there was not. He said that there was only a measurement of the strength of the signal as the source passed through the antenna beam. So in his words, and I'm reading, he says, anyone who converts this to a sound would be doing something about as logical as converting measurements of the height of a baseball pop fly into sound. It might make a sound, but it doesn't tell you anything. And so I said, so there is no version of the WOW signal audio that's endorsed by SETI, and he said, no, it's all silly. So suddenly I realized, whoa, okay, so this audio that's been floating around out there is not legitimate audio associated with the WOW signal. So why on earth, when our UFO came down, did it produce a sound that is so similar to this sound that people believed was associated with the WOW signal? Now, I can come up with two possible explanations, and then I'd love to hear other input on this. Maybe one explanation is that, well, maybe any time you have some kind of a microphone exposed to an electromagnetic field, it can create this weird squealing sound, and whatever this audio is that's been floating around out there was just produced arbitrarily by taking a microphone and exposing it to a field. And in our case, we actually had a field from a UFO. That's one possibility, and then they just happened to sound similar. The other possibility is much more mind-boggling. Since we were asking all these people around the world to focus that day on helping us to bring down a UFO, is it possible that there were many people out there who at that time believed that that audio was associated legitimately with the WOW signal? And so as they were projecting their wishes or broadcasts or whatever, they were projecting and thinking of that sound, and that sound actually is part of a collective tulpa that was created, and maybe the whole thing was a tulpa, because we did this experiment in Michigan last year where we used wishing machines and hundreds of people saw a UFO. Is this possibly a tulpa? And by the way, George, I guess there could be a third explanation. What if the craft we got was actually a spacecraft or an interdimensional craft that was some kind of visitor, and it thought that we expected to hear the audio that people believed was associated with the WOW signal, and so it played that for us. I don't know the answer, and I know this
twist.
Is a very complex situation, but what do you think about that, George?
Well, that's an interesting twist that they would do that. But, I mean, at no time did you assume that, one, the object on the video was acting in any aggressive way. I asked you that last hour, but you're convinced it was peaceful maneuvers, playful maneuvers. How would you describe it?
Well, in every case, when people have seen these UFOs in Puerto Rico, there has never been anything that looks aggressive. I mean, it almost looks like these things are just going about their business. In the case of our experiment that we did in 2014, you could almost interpret that as a peaceful gesture, that this object, whatever it was or is, it flew down to the webcam and then it zipped off into space.
Do you have many abduction cases in Puerto Rico?
There are some, but there aren't many. You'd be surprised. You'd think there would be more. There are plenty of cases where people have seen aliens and cases where people have woken up in the middle of the night and they have some kind of a being of light standing in their bedroom, which scares the bejesus out of them. But there, I mean, other than, again, two or three that I know of, most people say that these beings are not there to harm them in some way. If anything, I mean, they could have done that already. And so they seem to be possibly either in some cases working with some of the military installations here, or are possibly just curious, or they're just kind of going about their business. And it's very sort of egocentric of us to think that these beings would care enough about us to even feel threatened by us or to want to pay much attention to what we're doing.
All right, let's go to the phones now. West of the Rockies in Glendale, Arizona, Viola is with us. Hi there, Vi, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm so happy to be able to talk to you. My son is 55 now, or 56. When he was about 12 years old, I kept having a reoccurring dream that he was going down in quicksand.
Oh, geez.
Well, about a month later, my son was a desert rat. He was always exploring the desert. He was out at the sand and gravel pit with some friends, between 12 and 13 years old. And One afternoon, my front door burst open. I had a divider between my family room and kitchen area, and the divider didn't come clear to the ceiling, but above the divider, I could see a top of a man's head, real kinky hair, and my son burst through the door first. He said, "You can quit having that dream now, Mom. It happened."
Oh, my.
And this tall, slender African-American man came around the corner from that divider. He said, "Ma'am, I need to tell you something. I work at the sand and gravel pit, and I stayed overtime, and off in the distance, I could hear a bunch of boys screaming for help." He said, "I ran as fast as I could to get over where I heard the screams coming from." He said, "Your son was in this, I think they call it jelly mud, it's similar to quicksand, clear up to his neck.
Ready to go down.
Ready to go down. This man got him out of there. And I didn't have any money at the time. I said, "Sir, I owe you everything, my life and everything for saving my son." I said, "I don't have any money here."
I bet, Vi, he didn't want a dime, did he?
Oh, no. He said, "That won't be necessary." He turned around, walked around that divider and down that hallway and out that front door. Well, I thought, well, if I can get his license number, maybe I can locate him somehow and my husband would reward him. Well, I ran to the window that faced the street, and I ran there right the minute he got out that door, and there was nobody. There was no car. There was no man.
He didn't even exist, did he?
No. No, he was an angel.
I love it. Josh, what do you think of that one?
You know, Viola, I am so happy you called. I love hearing experiences like this because ultimately it tells us about a fantastic property of the universe. Actually, a couple, but one being that time is a flexible thing and that past, present, and future are really illusions, and there are certain circumstances when your mind is able to escape your body and see that. I mean, one of the reasons that I personally am so confident in the reality of ESP is that when I was in middle school, one night I had a very vivid dream that my science teacher came into the classroom wearing a blue shirt. I can see it right now. She slid a stool up there in front of the classroom, and she sat down, and she said, "I have found a job somewhere else, and so I'm very sorry. I'm not going to be your teacher anymore." And we were all really sad because we loved her. Well, guess what happened the next day? The exact scenario played out, and I'm sitting there with my jaw on the desk as I see my dream, you know, actually materialize. And I have 100% confidence and what I experienced in my dream and what I saw there. And I know that that is proof of ESP. And I think that when you dream, when you're lying there sleeping, your body is trying to heal itself. And so all the energy and all the resources are going into the physical body so it can rebuild cells and whatnot. And in the meantime, your conscious self is actually removed. And when your conscious self is removed, you get into this timeless space that physicists talk about where you can sometimes see into the past and the future, especially those peaks in the future when very dramatic things happen, like what happened to your son. And obviously there are also beings or messengers in some cases out there who can also recognize that you're one of those people who is detecting these things, and they can show up in your life to sort of reinforce it at those critical moments.
Josh, what would you say your expertise is in the paranormal world? Would it be ghosts, UFOs, chupacabras? What would you say your expertise is?
You know, I'm glad that you asked that question because I started out as a ghost researcher. And what I found was that if you stick with the field of the paranormal long enough, it doesn't matter what your introduction is, whether it's ghosts or UFOs or cryptids or psychic phenomena or interdimensional beings, if you stick with this long enough, you will eventually see that all of these things interconnect. As Charles Fort said, you can measure a circle beginning anywhere. And therefore, I would say that after all these years, my area of expertise is studying the relationship between matter and energy, how that certain things that seem intangible can change phase, can change frequency, and turn into something that is physical, that is tangible, and vice versa, and understanding what are the limits of this, what are the boundaries of this, how far does it go?
Next up, we've got Nick in Garden City, New York. Hey, good morning, Nick.
Hey, George. Hey, Joshua. What's going on?
Welcome aboard.
Joshua, two quick questions for you. That piece of debris that you have, what makes you so certain that it is what it is? And number two, in your whole time of owning it, have you ever been threatened by, say, anyone in the government or anything saying to, oh, give this up or else?
All right, Nick, great questions. And, you know, I obtained this debris in 2008. I wasn't there when it was collected, but there were other people there whom I trust, and so I believe it was actually collected in the manner described to me.
Kind of describe what it looks like, Josh, for people who aren't going to have the benefit of going to Asheville.
Okay, well, I have 6 or 7 different pieces of it. Some are thin, some are thick, but they look like various pieces of aluminum, basically. It's a silvery material that also has a charred kind of burnt, twisted look to it. And I don't want to say, honestly, too much about it because I do want to save some surprises for the folks who are going to
hear about it. You toughy, you.
Yeah, but you know, as far as being threatened, there have been a number of occasions throughout my life when I have no doubt that there have been agents that I presume are affiliated with parts of the government who have showed up and have tried to find out what I know and what I'm up to. As a matter of fact, several years ago, I wrote a letter to the FBI, which anybody can do. But and if you do this properly, you can ask, do you have a file on me? And if so, may I see it? And they are required by law to respond. Now, I have never in my life been arrested. I was born right here in the United States of America. My family on both sides have been here since the 1700s. And there is no reason that I should have any type of criminal record or any kind of interest in my life whatsoever from the government. And the FBI wrote me a letter back, which I have framed and I've used it, I've shown it plenty of times in programs, that says they do indeed have a file on me, but they would not show it to me because they said, unfortunately, the records we were looking for could not be located at this time. So the only reason the FBI would have a file on me is because of the work and the research that I do. There is no other reason. And when you look at these, you know, the history of law enforcement, and you know that the FBI was sitting there listening to the lyrics to Louie Louie over and over and over for weeks trying to figure out if there was an obscene word, you have to understand, private citizens do get all the time.
Oh, they do all the time, Josh. We're coming back for more in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, as many of you know by now, Joshua P. Warren will be one of our 3 guests in Asheville, North Carolina on August 27th. Tickets still available there. If you go to our website, click the highlight reel picture, you'll see it right there. It'll take you to a link, and then just look for the tickets. There'll be a little area there that says Danheiser Wagner Production. Click that, and then you pick out your seats. Come on by, and the good seats are still available, and there are lots in the balcony if you want to sit up there, too, and cheer us on. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com and just look for the link for the Asheville, North Carolina event. Welcome back to Coast to Coast. Welcome back to Joshua P. Warren and your phone calls as well. It's always a fast night, Josh, when you're on the show, isn't it?
It sure is. And, you know, I thank you, George, for allowing me to go through so many different topics and talk about just a spectrum of weird things, and it's always fun to come on, and that's what makes it go so quickly.
Now, you have to promise me one thing about Asheville, North Carolina, and that is, after you hear me sing, you need to stay through the rest of the show.
Well, you know, I was there in Boise, Idaho.
Uh-huh.
standing right off to the side when you sang, and I tell you, some of these men in the audience were having to pull their women and rein them back in. They were swooning over you. So I think that in and of itself, it shows the mesmerism that you have when that singing voice sails over the microphone.
Here in St. Louis, a woman rushed the stage when I was singing, and she threw me a piece of garment, and I'm going, oh, please, God, my kids are here. No, don't make this. And thank God it was a T-shirt.
Oh, well, sure. You've got that magic. What a curse. Is it a curse or a blessing, George?
It's a good question, Josh. Back to the calls we go. Justin in Hanford, California, happens to be a first-time caller. Hi, Justin. Go ahead.
Hey, George. How you doing?
Good.
I was actually in southern Missouri when this happened to me, but me and my cousin were sitting around a fire, and we saw a green light come out of the tree line and disappear in a field, and it's probably about 65 feet off the ground, and we thought it was like a Roman candle. So we went and investigated, you know, maybe some kids with some Roman candle or whatever. Didn't see anything, and I was actually driving back to Missouri from California, and I saw the same thing in Arizona, and it started about 100 feet off the tree line. It ended in the tree line driving on I-40. I was just wondering if Josh had any experience with something like that. It was just a green glow.
You know a lot about lights, Josh. What do you think?
Yeah, well, you know, and Justin, thank you for sharing that report. You know, obviously Missouri is well known for these weird spook lights. And then in Arizona, well, you have the Phoenix lights, which is a whole different type of phenomenon, but still odd lights in the sky. So both of those places are known for these weird things. The first thing that comes to my mind, Justin, is my experiences at Brown Mountain in western North Carolina, site of the Brown Mountain lights. And we're talking about a ridge here in the middle of the Pisgah National Forest, and it's about 2.5 miles long. And for at least 100 years, according to journalistic accounts, perhaps hundreds based upon local legends, people have seen these multicolored balls of light sort of appear around the mountain. And they sometimes float right around the ground. In other cases, they go up into the sky. And my team and I spent about 15 years getting permits from the Forest Service and camping up there. And one of the most outstanding experiences that I ever had there was, I believe, in 2001. I was there with some colleagues, Brian Irish and Casey Fox, and we were on deep into the mountains that night at our own little campsite, and there was nobody else around because you needed a permit to be there. And at one point, I looked over and saw this large ball of light that looked several times the size of a basketball in the nearby woods. And it just ascended in a straight line right up into the sky. We videotaped it with two cameras. It went all the way into the sky until it just disappeared. And I actually have footage of that at brownmountainlights.com, which is one of my websites. And, you know, that was incredible because it was quiet. It was pulsating. It was clearly either some kind of UFO, or it could also be a natural phenomenon similar to ball lightning. However, I have seen those lights appear greenish as well. That particular night, it was white, but sometimes these lights look green, sometimes they look red, sometimes they look blue, and I tend to think that that may have to do with the frequency at which they're pulsating, because that determines their color. So these could be Earth lights, which are just a spectacular phenomenon, or, you know, we could be talking about something more like a UFO. But I have certainly seen similar things, and those were both big hot spots that you were in.
John in Minnesota, thanks for calling, John, and thanks for holding. Go ahead.
Hey, no problem. It's an honor and a privilege to speak with you, gentlemen. I wanted to go back to the UFO sighting at the Homeland Security Facility.
Sure.
In Puerto Rico, if I may, and I wanted to correlate it to something that I saw in the past, not personally, but do you remember the show Sightings? This was back in 1992.
Sure do. Absolutely.
Okay, they had a story on there where the Top Gun facility where they train our fighter pilots, they were talking about there were these tracking cameras installations there, what they're normally used for is to, when they get the pilots after training exercise back into the briefing room, they'll go over the footage of their maneuvers to, you know, point out different things, etc. Well, one day, something got out of Area 51, which is just adjacent to that, and it was caught by these automatic tracking cameras, and this was recorded. Now, these things are apparently infrared slash thermal as well, so it had that same black type image that Josh was describing. This also was a shape-shifting object while it was making multi-angle turns that we always hear about, but it was spherical in the middle, and then it had a bunch of little spheres all around the side of it, and then it would completely morph into something completely different, like it looked like a blob. It was not a fixed shape, and I was wondering if either of you gentlemen had an opportunity to take a look at that footage.
Josh, this would be your bailiwick.
Yeah, well, you know, John, I loved that show, Sightings. I mean, I watched it religiously. I don't recall that particular piece of footage, so I'm definitely now going to go back and find it. And, you know, one thing, though, that is so fascinating about seeing these, for lack of a better term, shape-shifting UFOs, is that even though it's easy for us to look at them and say, okay, well, maybe this is something that is both organic and technological, and that's why it has that kind of shape. Maybe when you have a device which is able to travel at these speeds so effortlessly, maybe there's an exterior on the craft that is constantly morphing to all of the different dynamic things in the environment. Because if something is flying around this planet, especially going at some of these just ridiculous speeds, I mean, you have to deal with the G-forces, you have to deal with weather currents, you deal with heat from friction. I mean, the list goes on. And it would kind of make sense to have an adaptive skin around some of these things that is constantly changing in order to sort of place the energy and maybe the durability of the craft wherever it needs to be at any given time, since that all these forces are kind of unevenly dispersed around Earth. So that's one possibility to explain what a truly advanced technology is. Of course, another one is maybe these things are not shape-shifting as much as they appear. Maybe it has more to do with the way that they are perceived by our cameras. That doesn't account much for how someone might see this with the naked eye, but it could be that there is some kind of a force field around these devices which is warping gravity and therefore warping the light that's coming from the craft or being reflected off the craft, and therefore to our cameras it looks like it's shape-shifting, but there's some more fixed structure in the middle.
Joshua, we get so many calls about stories from the afterlife. Are you at a point, because you just mentioned that you've been dealing a lot with energy and in that relationship where you're becoming an expert on that, what do you think the other side might be? Is it just a burst of energy?
Well, you know, I, in my early years of studying all this, which I'm talking about 25 years ago, really getting into it on a professional level, I used to be very, very cautious about just, you know, giving out the data, reserving my opinions. But over time, I have now had enough personal experiences that I can say I have a good deal of, at very least, circumstantial evidence to indicate that there is, in fact, an afterlife, that when you die, your self-awareness continues to be aware. It goes through a transition period where maybe things shut down temporarily, but then everything kicks back up again. And ultimately, what it boils down to is that we exist as humans in this physical plane within a very narrow band of frequencies. We become ridiculously egocentric when we think all the time that everything in the universe is related to this tiny sliver of things that we can perceive right now. There's a lot more going on. There are many, many dimensions. We know there are at least 11 or 12, and we can't even comprehend that. Who knows how many there are? So throughout your life, you collectively build up a certain frequency level within you. And when you finally move on out of this, the frequency level that you have attained determines, in my opinion, where you move to next. So when you die, you bring with you what you have accumulated, and hopefully it will move you into a higher plane, which is where things seem to be much more free, things seem to be, from what we can tell, much more abundant, and you're a happier soul. Otherwise, you go the opposite direction. You become a denser, lower frequency, and therefore you are less mobile. You're more parasitic, and that's where we get a lot of these stories about, you know, humans that are so unrecognizable, they are almost considered demonic. And so ultimately what you want to do is to surround yourself with things that elevate you, that make you feel strong and proud and honest. They help you to hold your head high, because that's a physical illustration of what I'm talking about. And then therefore, when you leave, you will just transfer into a frequency that is higher and is therefore more pleasant. And I believe that's what people have traditionally referred to when they talk about heaven.
Josh, you love what you're doing, don't you?
I'm so fortunate that I knew from a very young age, George, that this was what I wanted to do. And I knew that there was no singular pathway to do this. I mean, you know, I always sort of chuckle a little bit when people call me a paranormal expert, because it's hard to be an expert at things that are mysteries that we don't understand. And so I also am very well aware of the absurdity of all of this, of trying to present oneself as an authority on things that are unknown. But everything that is now an integral part of our lives was once a mysterious thing. I mean, people were living in gravitational fields long before Isaac Newton came around to attempt to explain somewhat decently what gravity was. And so there are all these things that are considered paranormal now that will be normal in the future. And I've always wanted to be one step ahead of what is known, and to play with what's possible. And fortunately, all these years, people have supported me honestly, just by buying books, by watching TV shows, by listening to radio shows. They value that I'm a guy who has the freedom to go out and look at these things and do my best to bring back an honest presentation. And I'm so thankful to all the listeners of Coast and to you and everybody else who has allowed me and supported me in this endeavor.
We'll always do that for you, Josh, always. Robert in the Bronx in New York, welcome to the show. Robert, good to have you on with us.
Yeah, great. Great show for tonight. I just got a question. I was down at the Jersey Shore, and the lights, electricity went out, and I think I saw a ghost in, like, an old Victorian house, and the tour lady saw it as well.
Huh.
So my question is, does electricity have anything to do with it?
Oh, boy.
And the other question is, has there ever been a case where you feel like you're being prepped to see it? In other words, I'd just gone into this hotel, and I kept fixating on the transformer on the pole the day before the lights went out. I had a nightmare that night, and I said, you know, something's going to happen. So sure enough, a bird flies into the wires in the town there.
Oh, God.
And the lights go out for 20 blocks. We ended up walking around across the street, ended up in an old tour guide, and the lights were still out. It was during the day. But that's when the tour lady and myself saw this Victorian woman just walking into a room. We both said, well, she'll join the tour later. But obviously she never did. So I was just wondering if electricity has ever been associated with something like
Josh,
that.
I know your answer. You're going to say yes.
Very good, George. I'm glad that you asked this question, Robert, because I am playing with electricity every day. You know, I have a laboratory, and I constantly am looking at how these strange things somehow express themselves through electrical charge and electrical fields and electromagnetic fields. And it's interesting because, you know, you have scientists out there who divide the world up into a handful of fundamental forces, and they say that there's no relationship between gravity and electricity. Well, I think that is not true. I believe there is one. We just haven't found it yet. You, as a human, are an electrodynamic machine. Every thought that you have produces an electrical pulse. Every signal that comes into you, it travels through your nervous system, which is electrically oriented. So you are an electrical machine, and therefore, when you're interacting with the world around you, you're really having an interaction of various electrical forces. So, in fact, I think that if you want to look at the interface, however temporary, between ourselves and the physical world, as well as what these things are we call non-physical, it happens through an electrostatic interface where there is a period where enough charges build up in a space where things can touch each other that otherwise would not be able to interact, and so on. As far as, you know, being prepped to see it, that's a very interesting phrase.
It sure is.
Yeah. I mean, I will say from a bit of a philosophical point of view, I tend to believe that this whole reality, this life that we're having, is a big classroom, and that we're all here to learn to be better creators and more responsible creators. And I think that there's, as George does, there's no coincidence. There's meaning behind everything. And sometimes you see something because you're supposed to see it. And hopefully you have a mind that's open enough and aware enough to appreciate it and learn from it and become a better person.
Josh, get that website out for us and direct people to that video again.
Okay, I hope everybody listening will please go to joshuapwarren.com. Again, there's no period after the P in the web address, joshuapwarren.com. Please subscribe to my free e-newsletter so I can let you know first when my new live webcams are going to be up of the UFO hotspots. And there's a free good luck charm there. There's a gallery of the strange that's got all kinds of amazing video and pictures. All that stuff and more at joshuapwarren.com.
All right, my friend. Always good to have you on the program. When I come back in a moment, it's open lines. Anything goes. But I really want you to dabble with the demons and the paranormal and the unknown. Have some fun. Back in a moment.